12, if you'll be turning to that passage, verse 32, I'll catch up with you there in just a minute. Louis Pasteur was so afraid of germs and infection that he refused to shake hands with anybody. And as I read that this week, I thought he might have been a little bit ahead of his time. Benjamin and President and Mrs. Benjamin Harris were so afraid of the newfangled electricity that had been installed at the White House that if no one was there to turn off the lights when they went to bed, they just slept with the lights on. Joseph Stalin had 8 bedrooms in his Moscow residence, and he would randomly choose to sleep in a different one every night so nobody would know where he was, because he feared being assassinated. There are about 10% of our population, 9.1% of our population, has been diagnosed with a phobia, which is an intense, irrational fear. It can be a fear of a spider, enclosed spaces, open spaces, being around people, snakes, dogs. Well, there's just all kinds of phobias that people have, and some people have more than one. Doesn't seem to be getting any better as time goes along. Teenagers are above the curve. 15.2% of teenagers have a phobia. Women are twice as likely to have a phobia as men, 12% to 5.8%. We live in a world that is dangerous. We live in a world that has some legitimate concerns. But where do we draw the line? The Bible talks a lot about fear. Maybe there's something that keeps you awake at night. Is it spiders, snakes, dogs? Maybe some macho man says, I don't fear anything. I'm not scared of anything. But if I were to hand him the microphone and say, would you get up and say a few words? He might stammer and say, no, that's not his cup of tea. He might be unafraid of anything along the lines of an animal, but if his girlfriend brings up the subject of marriage, he might be afraid of commitment. You think about fears that people have, run the gamut from physical to emotional to spiritual. What scares Americans the most? Top 12, here we go. Snakes, public speaking, heights, that one's mine on the whole list, being closed in a small space, spiders, needles, and getting shots, mice, flying on an airplane, dogs, thunder and lightning, going to the doctor, the dark. Anything on that list that resonates with you especially? Maybe there's more than one for some of us. There's one mom tucked her little son in bed one night during a summer storm. And as she started to walk out of the room, he said, Mommy, will you sleep in here with me tonight? And she went back over and hugged him and said, Honey, I can't. I got to sleep in Daddy's room. He was quiet for a moment, and then he said, That big sissy, you know. There are a lot of fears out there that can make sissies out of grown men. But Luke 12, 32 is a passage that's been on my mind for a couple of weeks. I've been reading and studying and thinking about what Jesus said there. Fear not, little flock, for it is the Father's good pleasure to give the kingdom to you. We may not have much of this world's goods. We might not have 2 nickels to rub together. We might wonder where the next meal's coming from or where the money will come to pay the bills at the end of the month. But we are all rich as Christians Because we have the kingdom. And the kingdom gives us blessings that no amount of money could ever buy. And not only in this life, but the kingdom, because we are in possession of it, we are a part of it, promises blessings eternally. Fear not, little flock. I want to think about fear in Bible class with you. Just three simple points. First, there are three legitimate fears according to the Bible. The first one is self-preservation. When God made Adam and Eve, He made them with a mechanism called fear, a fear response. That was part of the human experience, not just in our generation, not just in recent years. It's not something that has evolved over time. That was equipment that came installed on a human being from the very beginning. You find that Adam and Eve were fearful after the sin, and they were hiding in the bushes from God, or hiding from God in the Garden of Eden, Genesis 3:8-10. And self-preservation is something the Bible teaches is legitimate. You know, fear is what causes a soldier to roll into the foxhole when he hears the sound of the artillery or the whistle of the incoming bomb. It's what causes a person not to drive recklessly down a country road or to try to swim the Mississippi when it's flooded or to pick up a poisonous snake. I mean, those are things that we fear, but there's a good reason to fear those, because there is the likelihood that we would destroy the life that God has given to us. Acts 16:28, Paul, when he was in the prison in Philippi, you may remember there's an earthquake. The jailer was going to kill himself because he thought that the prisoners had fled and they would take his life in the place of theirs. And Paul calls out of the darkness and he says, "Do thyself no harm. We are all here." That's a good principle. Do thyself no harm. Ephesians 5:28-29 says, "For no man ever yet hated himself." That is, no healthy person ever hates himself or herself. And so we nourish and cherish our own bodies, Paul continues in that text. And that's natural. A part of that nourishing and cherishing, a part of that not doing any harm, is the fear of self-preservation that's built within us. When something is threatening our lives, then we have a natural response to that. We get out of the way of the dangerous thing that's coming toward us, or we take steps to keep ourselves from being sick or becoming injured or losing our lives because we live in a dangerous world. So self-preservation is a legitimate fear. It can go too far so that it is crippling and becomes a worry or an anxiety for us. There's a second legitimate fear. Fear God. Let's go over to Proverbs and spend just a few minutes looking at these verses. There is an interesting contrast or different wording found in Proverbs 1:7, where it says, "The fear of the Lord," that's not the Lord's fear, that means our fear of God, our respect for God, our awe of God, "is the beginning of knowledge." What is it that causes a person to read the Scriptures, to try to come to an understanding of the Bible? Well, it is a fear of God. It's God's book. We respect God. We want to know what God says. And we want to be prepared to be judged by God at the end. Now, there is another verse in Proverbs that's similar. Proverbs 9:10, if you want to flip over three or four pages or four or five pages from where you are. It says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of, not knowledge this time, it is the beginning of wisdom. Wisdom is more than knowledge. Wisdom is the ability to apply knowledge in a given circumstance. Here I've read my Bible, I can quote parts of it, I know what it says, but do I know what it means? Do I know how I can take it out of the church building, out of the sermon context, and use it when I get to work, or use it when I get to school, or use it in my family? Do I have the wisdom to apply the information that I have from God? That's what the beginning of the fear of the Lord is the beginning of. If I fear God, if I want to please God, then I'm going to translate this knowledge, this academic information, into an internalized belief system that is acted out in words and deeds. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You could also put Psalm 112:1 in your notes there. Ecclesiastes 8:12 is a similar passage, but I wanted to focus on Ecclesiastes 12, 13, and 14. Ecclesiastes is a book written by Solomon. It is thought that he did write three books. It's thought that he wrote Song of Solomon as a young man newly married, and that's the theme of Song of Solomon. It's thought that he wrote Proverbs in the busy time of his life, the middle part of his life, when he was active in ruling his kingdom. And then he wrote Ecclesiastes at the end of his life. And he had some regrets because Solomon left the Lord for a period of time in his life. And I like to think that Ecclesiastes is his confession and his return back to God. We don't know that that's the case, but it does make sense. And Ecclesiastes goes through an experiment, a long-term experiment that Solomon did on how to find happiness in life. Now, he was a king. He was very rich. He was very wise. He had opportunities to enjoy life that few people had ever had before or would have after him. He basically had anything that he wanted. And so he experimented with wine, and he experimented with women, and he experimented with building projects, and he experimented with music, and he just went down the gauntlet of all the things that people think they can find happiness in. But he repeats again and again in that book, it was all vexation of spirit. It was a striving after the wind. There was nothing of substance in it. I could not find fulfillment there. But then he gets down to chapter 12, and he gives us the conclusion of the experiment. In the last two verses, he says, now here, the conclusion of the whole matter, fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. And 14 says that God's going to bring every work into judgment. So we live in view of the judgment day. So what is the purpose of life? What is it that's going to give me fulfillment in life? Well, I can make the same mistakes that Solomon did and try those things. But it's going to end the same as it did with him and with so many other people. Or I can take Solomon's experience and apply it in my own life and have a good life. Fear God and keep His commandments. We do that, we will have a good life, and we will be prepared for the judgment that comes after life. So fear God. That's a legitimate concern. You can put down Luke 23:40, the thief on the cross, as we call the penitent man, said to the impenitent thief on the cross, dost thou not fear God, seeing we are in the same condemnation? Look, man, you're about to die. You know, it seems like you would have some fear of God. Now, he had changed his mind on the cross, and he had thrown himself on the mercy of Jesus, correctly believing him to be the Savior. Dost thou not fear God? That's a good question. What about Deuteronomy 10, 12 through 13? Now Israel, what doth the Lord require, the Lord thy God require of thee, but to fear the Lord thy God, to walk in all His ways, and to love Him, and to serve the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, to keep the commandments of the Lord, and His statutes, which I command thee this day for thy good. Was that in Solomon's Bible all along? Yes. And as a king, he was required to read the Bible when he came to the throne. But he had this experiment and he came to the same conclusion. God had already told him, If you want to have fulfillment, you want to have a good life, fear God, keep His commandments. Love God with all your heart and with all your soul. Of course, you recognize that from Jesus' quotation in the New Testament, Matthew 22, 36 to 38. Franklin D. Roosevelt said famously, this I think was in his inaugural speech, one of them, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." 1933. We would have to correct that, though, as Christians. The only thing we have to fear is God Himself. If we fear God, we need not fear anything else. We're going to come back to that thought in a moment, but I wanted to address it or give it here because it fits in the lesson here with fearing God. And I wanted to talk about the context of our faith or the generation that we live in. Now, we live in a generation that has no fear of God, or has less fear of God than the previous generation. And many have no fear of God. Paul talks about that in Romans 3:18. There is no fear of God before their eyes. There are people who do not give God a second thought as they go about their activities every day. And there are some people that when they give God thought, it is only in mockery, or only in fighting against Him or denying Him. Genesis 20:11, Abraham said that he feared because he did not think there was the knowledge of God in this place. He had the right to fear, in a sense, the self-preservation sense. For if we dwell among those who have no fear of God, then what is the rule for their action other than might makes right, do what you can get away with doing? In the days of the judges, it was like that. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes, Judges 21:25. Psalm 9:17 says that the nations that forget God shall be turned aside into hell. Nations that forget God. Jeremiah 5:22 is a good passage along those lines, but I wanted to read with you John 3:19. And while you're turning to that passage, I want to ask you a question. What is more surprising, a child that is afraid of the dark or an adult that is afraid of the light? What do you mean, preacher, afraid of the light? Well, let's read what Jesus said. Of course, this is the same context where Jesus says God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. A few verses before, God sent not His Son to condemn the world, but to save the world. Verse 17. All right, drop down to verse 19. And this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world. John 8:12, Jesus we'll say a little later, I am the light of the world. So light had entered the world. The Bible often uses, and I think we mentioned this on Wednesday night, darkness as a figure for sin. So people that sat in darkness saw a great light, Isaiah 9:2, Matthew 4:16. Because Jesus came to earth and He visited these communities that had the darkness of sin that had settled over them and even ventured over into Syria just outside of Jerusalem where He healed the Syrophoenician woman. And so those Gentiles actually had an opportunity to see the light of the world. Well, so anyway, that's what that's saying in verse 19. Now the next part of the verse says, and men loved darkness rather than light. Why would anybody love the dark rather than the light? Because their deeds were evil. No, I don't want to be a Christian because I would have to give up my ... my drinking, my carousing, my drugs, my thievery, my business practices, my Well, you could make a very long list of why people refuse to read the Bible, refuse to come to church services, refuse to obey the gospel, because I love my deeds of darkness. I would rather have the pleasures of sin for a season than I would the hope of heaven forever. Now you continue in the reading and it says, for everyone that doeth evil hateth the light. They're not indifferent to truth. They're not indifferent to the Bible. It's not enough that you, if you want to go to church, that's fine. You want to believe the Bible, that's fine. But I'm going to go a different way. No, Jesus says there is an antagonism built into that. There is a hatred built into light for those who love darkness. You continue in the reading. Neither cometh to the light. So which is more pitiable, a child afraid of the dark or an adult afraid of the light? Neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, and that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought of God. So, a legitimate fear is the fear of God. And nations need to fear God. Families need to fear God. Individuals need to fear God. Churches need to fear God. Those are legitimate fears. But now let's think about a third legitimate fear, and that is the fear of hell. Jesus said, Matthew 25:41, that some are going to be sent to that place. I know the world laughs at it. I know many religious people won't preach on it anymore. I know it has been watered down or completely muted, but the Bible has not changed since Jesus made this statement. The Bible does not change because men vote against its doctrines and men say, I don't want to believe that, or that can't be true. If Jesus said it, then it's true. If Jesus said that's what's coming in the future, then you can bank on it. It is more sure than the bench upon which you sit or the carpet upon which I stand. It is more sure than the foundation upon which this building rests, because the earth will one day be burned up, 2 Peter 3:9. But at that time, we will go to the judgment, and then reality will only be heaven or hell. And for me, not to fear hell is either to be insane, number one, or to be uninformed, number two. Because you cannot believe what the Bible says about hell and not fear it. Could you come up with a more horrific description than a lake that burns with fire and brimstone? A bottomless pit. A place where there is weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth. A place that it is impossible to leave. A place that is afar off from God. Well, we could go farther in the descriptions, but why should we have to? If that doesn't cause fear, what could? Luke 12:4-5. You might read that with me, and you could put in your notes 2 Thessalonians 1:7-9, saying that when Jesus comes, He's going to take vengeance on those that know not God and that obey not the gospel. That vengeance includes a fiery retribution. But now look at Luke 12. This is recorded in Matthew also, but Luke gives it a little more fleshing out. 2:1, Matthew 10:28, or Luke 12:4-5. So let's read Luke's account, discuss it only briefly, and move on. But I say unto you, my friends, be not afraid of them that kill the body, and after that have no more that they can do. The worst that the world can do to us is physical. Kill the body. But I will forewarn you whom ye shall fear. Is there a legitimate fear of hell? Yes, Jesus said you should fear it. Fear him which after he hath killed hath power to cast into hell. Yea, I say unto you, fear him. Once one is informed, how can he not be afraid of that place? Either he's an unbeliever or he is insane. Let's talk about now point number two. 62 what nots, or fear nots rather, in the Bible. 62 fear nots. We're not going to go through anywhere near that list. We're just going to pull one out as an illustration and move to our third point. But that phrase is found often in the Scripture. 62 times is a lot. The word fear is used 493 using all forms of that word. The word afraid is found almost 200 times. So fear is a frequent Bible subject. And that phrase, fear not, is found in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. Let's just talk about persecution. And that will serve as an illustration or a summary of all those fear nots, some of which are on that same subject. But don't fear those that can harm the body. Jesus just said you could put down Acts 4:13 to get an illustration of that, where those apostles said, we're going to do what Jesus told us to do. We're not going to fear you, we're going to fear him. I'm summarizing that. You could put Acts 20:24, Philippians 1:28, Revelation 2:10. Fear none of those things which shall come upon you, for they shall cast you into prison, and so forth. But he said, don't fear that, but be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. But fear has caused some of the famous Bible characters to sin. You think about Adam and Eve. We mentioned earlier Genesis 3:8-10. Fear of punishment for sin caused them to hide from God. What about Abraham? After God had made that promise to him and appeared to him, Genesis 12, and then Genesis 15, he appeared to him again when he was 85 and said, I'll be a shield to you. But then he sinned in Genesis 16 with Hagar, Sarah's handmaid, because he did not really believe God. What about Moses, who feared Pharaoh, Exodus 2:14? He feared the voice of the people, Exodus 4:1. What about the disciples who forsook Jesus and fled? And Peter, who denied him three times, Matthew 26:69-70. What about Pilate, who, though he knew Jesus to be innocent, allowed himself to be intimidated to sign the death warrant of Jesus Christ? Matthew 27:24. And what about those who refused to confess Christ because they did not want to be cast out of the temple? John 12:43. Romans 1:16, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God and salvation to all those that believe, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. I came across this quotation. I thought I would include it in this class because it's powerful. And it says, it's a fearful piece of meanness that men should molest their fellows for being godly. If you have a right to swear, I have a right to sing psalms. If you have a right to forsake worship, I have a right to keep it. I might be ashamed if I were a drunkard or a swearer, but I will never be ashamed that I am a follower of the crucified Son of God. Number three, the one fear that conquers all others. We talked about three legitimate fears. We've talked about the 62 fear nots in a summary fashion, but now the one fear that conquers all others. What fear is that? Well, back to Proverbs for this. We'll start in chapter 3, Proverbs 3, verses 25 and 26. We mentioned this earlier. Now we'll come back and discuss it. Proverbs 3, beginning in 25, the Bible says, be not afraid of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked when it cometh. Don't be afraid. Well, what would keep me from being afraid? What would alleviate fear out of my life? Verse 26, for the Lord shall be thy confidence and shall keep thy foot from being taken. If I fear the Lord, I don't have to fear anything else. Even self-preservation, even hell. Because the fear of the Lord will protect me. It teaches me to use my body in His service, and that would include the self-protection. It keeps me from having to go to that bad place. The next one is Proverbs 14 and verse 26. 14:26, where the Bible says, in the fear of the Lord is strong confidence. That's the opposite of fear. And His children shall have a place of refuge. Proverbs 18, verse 10. 18:10. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runneth into it and is safe. 19:23, maybe one page over. The fear of the Lord tendeth to life. And he that hath it shall abide satisfied. He shall not be visited with evil. Well, that would take some discussion to flesh out how Christians can suffer, which we do, and still not be visited with evil. But the short answer is, nothing in this world can hurt us, even if they kill us. They just accelerate the reward that God has for us. So you could put down Psalm 34:7-11, Jeremiah 15:11. 2 Timothy 1, 6-8 is about Timothy being timid. And Paul said, we have not been given the spirit of timidity. Be bold. Verse 12, where Paul says, I am persuaded that he's able to keep that which I've committed to him against that day. Fear God, and you'll have nothing else to fear. That's a good quote to remember. But what about this one? When we fear men so much because we fear God so little. That's also true. Galatians 1:10, do I persuade men or God? Do I seek to please men? For if I yet please men, I should not be the servant of Christ. Well, let's talk about courage in our last 10 minutes here. What is courage? Courage is not something that we have, that we bring to the battle, that fortifies us against fear in the battle. That's not courage. What courage is what we earn during the battle for the next one. Courage is not absence of fear, but what we do in the presence of fear. I've read a good bit about Patton over the years. I read of an interview that he gave in Sicily with a military governor. And the military governor began by complimenting George Patton on his courage. And Patton said, I am not a brave man. In fact, I am a craven coward. I have never been within earshot of the guns or on the battlefield when I was not so afraid that my palms sweated. And Patton said later in his autobiography, this simple statement, I learned early in life not to take counsel of my fears. That's courage. Courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is not someone who's so dumb as not to be afraid of bullets that are flying, or artillery, or a battle that's going on that could end his life. That's not courage. That would be stupidity. But it is doing one's duty in spite of being afraid. I might be afraid to talk to my neighbor about the gospel. That's natural. The fear of rejection, the fear of consequences. But here the gospel meeting is coming up, and I say, I really need to invite them to the gospel meeting. Pray about it, think about it, watch for a good time. And then in spite of being afraid, I step over and say, when maybe she's out watering the flowers or he's out hoeing the corn, and say, man, this is some most beautiful flowers. You just have a knack for growing. Or how long before this corn will be in? Oh, by the way, our gospel meeting is starting Sunday, and we're having a fellowship meal and a great speaker's coming in. I've been wanting you to come visit with us sometime. You afraid? Yes. Accomplish duty in spite of it. That's courage. I read something this week. This is an illustration that's found in Malcolm Gladwell's book, David and Goliath. He's written several books. Maybe you've read Tipping Point or some of the others. But this one, he talks about in the years that before World War II, 1939, the military generals, British military generals, were concerned that if Hitler attacked London with his planes and bombs, there was nothing they could do to stop it. And that if he was relentless in that, they feared that the workers in the city who would make the munitions and the tanks and the trucks and keep the economy going would be so afraid that they would flee into the countryside and all industry would stop. So they began to take some steps. They planned underground bomb shelters. They used some existing existing spaces. They also built mental hospitals outside the city for the expected large number of people that would be unable to function because of the constant threat of being bombed in your house. What's interesting is that Hitler and his generals had the same idea. They thought if they bombed London, they would break the morale of the people and they would win. So that's what they did when the war started. For the first 2 years, 40 and 41, they were relentless. 71 separate attacks. Tens of thousands of buildings were destroyed. Hundreds of thousands of people were homeless. About 30,000 people died. 50,000 people were seriously injured. It was terrible. But what he did not bargain for is the will of the British people. They did not flee to the countryside. They did not fill up those mental hospitals. In fact, they had to repurpose those for something else after they saw they weren't going to need them. Here are four pictures that tell a pretty good story. Now, the next two are interesting because of facial expressions. This is Liverpool, but same time. You see the smiles on the faces of the people that are being evacuated? This is from one of those underground shelters when the bombs were going off. Look at the faces, if you could see them. Do you see fear? Do you see misery? Do you see hopelessness? No, I see purpose. I see smiles. I see conversation going on. What they learned, and Gladwell says this in his book, what they learned was that there were three results of the bombing. One, obviously, were the dead people. Two, were the near misses who were traumatized by the event. And three, were the remote misses who were exhilarated by the experience. That's what nobody expected. One illustration, there was a middle-aged man who was worked in a button factory, and he had been bombed out of his house twice. And he was offered to be evacuated to the countryside for he and his wife to be evacuated. And he said, "What? And miss all this? Not for all the gold in China. This has never happened before. It'll never happen again. I'm not going anywhere." You know, the fear when it's not realized, when the threat of death is lifted, there is the natural exhilaration from it. That's what he's talking about. Well, I said all that to get to this. You have the same thing in religion. You have the casualties, those that fear drives away from God, that give up in times of persecution. But you also have those who don't handle it well, the near misses that are traumatized. But the far larger number of Christians are those remote misses, remote only in the sense that it does not ruin their faith, it actually makes it better. David is a good example of that, 1 Samuel 17, 35 and 36. I'm out of time, but let me just give you the thought and you can take it with you. David, when he was went to the battlefield and he was willing to fight Goliath, and King Saul said, "You're just a boy." He says, "I killed a lion. I killed a bear. What's this uncircumcised Philistine going to do?" And then he says that the lion attacked him. He grabbed him by the mane and killed him. You talk about life and death. God delivered the lion and the bear into my hand. He'll deliver this Philistine into my hand. So, the lesson for us is, the only fear we have is fear God. And God will take care of everything else. And that's what the other verses on the screen say. Don't cast off your confidence. It's not something that can be taken from us. It's something that we have to cast off. Hebrews 10:35. So thank you for being in class this morning. We'll be dismissed until the worship hour.